Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today, we're going to be reading, My Wife Started Acting Strange About a Week Ago. Now I'm Being Charged for Her Murder, by Weathers Writing from Reddit. I hope you enjoy this creepy story, wherever you are. Let's get started. It all started that night I took Charlie for a walk. It was just another normal weekend night. I'd spent most of the day tending to some much-needed yard work, and I capped it off by reshuffling some of the boxes that had been piling up in the garage into a marginally more organized orientation. I was heading back inside to treat myself to a nice glass of cold strawberry lemonade when I realized Charlie, our six-month-old German Shepherd, hadn't gone out yet. When I stepped through the interior garage door and into the kitchen, I saw his little ears perked up, his head tilted in a question that his expectant eyes had already answered. Walk? I said in that high-pitched voice owners use to get their dogs excited. He wagged his tail and lifted his paw, shooing it out toward me as if he were saying, Yeah, that's the one. All right, let me get your leash, I answered and started toward the front of the house to retrieve it from the hook next to the front door. But when I turned the corner to the adjacent hallway, I saw my wife, Evelyn, had already grabbed it and was halfway down the hall. Oh, were you going to walk him? I asked. She smiled. I could see she was tired. We'd been married for a couple of years, so I had a good understanding of her internal clock. She was definitely an early-to-bed, early-to-rise type of person. On the other hand, I couldn't have been more of a night owl. During the week, I'd slide into her schedule because I worked a sales job, which required me to be up at the crack of dawn. Then, on the weekend, she'd often stay up later with me, during the hours when I felt most active. In a way, our relationship was like a well-oiled machine. We were by no means perfect, and we probably had more differences than most other couples. She was creative and commissioned paintings, while I couldn't so much as draw the room I was sitting in. But we understood each other on a deep level, and our mutual love and commitment cleared the way for us to thrive. That being said, I could see the stretch of fatigue pulling at her eyes more than usual. She had been working hard for over 2 weeks on this particular mural for a local dentist's office. It was a bit out of her wheelhouse in terms of subject matter, but she had received an offer that she couldn't refuse, and now she was a couple days away from the deadline. Sensing this, I held out my hand and said, I got him. You go to bed. Are you sure? She asked, ending the question with a yawn. Yes, babe. I could use the fresh air anyway, and you look like you're about to pass out. She giggled, and in that subtle moment, I had the thought that she was the most beautiful woman in the whole world. Okay, you're right, she said and handed me the leash. But I'm going to make it up to you tomorrow. I know how much work you've been doing. I smiled at her, and for a moment I forgot about Charlie, suddenly desiring to rush over and give my wife a big hug. That was, until he barked at me and started jumping up and down on my leg. Hey, I know, I said, calming him. I turned back to my wife one more time, and that perfectly imperfect image of her is still ingrained deep in my mind. Her dirty blonde hair tied back in a ponytail, her green eyes half shut with sleepiness, her genuine smile, the crinkle of her nose, and most of all, the knowledge that this was in fact the woman I married. Because that would be the last time I ever saw her. The real her. I started out the garage with Charlie, not thinking too close to it. We would just be around the block after all. The sun had already set, so I was guided by lamplight through our quaint little neighborhood. Charlie was a series marker, so I'd stop with him every other mailbox or so and let him do his thing. Then it was on to the next. I remember the sky looked particularly clear. I could actually see the stars overhead, and the summer air was warm, if not a bit too warm. By the end of our walk, Charlie was panting. I trudged behind him up the graded incline of our driveway and tunnel visioned through the garage, not thinking twice about the garage lights being on until I flipped the switch to turn them off and the room actually got brighter. It's at this point I should explain how our garage lighting system works. It's actually quite simple. We have a motion light system installed that activates when anyone or anything passes through the threshold of the garage. The motion lights stay on for a couple minutes to allow a person, say, exiting a vehicle, to see where they're going. The second light system is just your basic switch-activated lights. Nothing fancy there. You flip the switch, they turn on. flip it again, and off they go. Well, when I flipped the switch and they turned on, I had a moment of dim confusion because I remember seeing the lights on as I walked with Charlie up the driveway. And then a chill worked down my spine as I realized that no, they weren't on, which means that the lights that were activated were the motion lights, which meant someone other than me had entered the garage less than 2 minutes ago. My first thought was of Evie's safety, and I nearly booked it into the house. That was until I heard a shoe slide against the cement door, a frozen place, the hairs standing up on the back of my neck as if there was an electrical charge in the air. I swallowed dry air, and then in a single motion, I spun around and saw my wife standing beside a pile of boxes near the back of the garage. "Holy crap!" I yelled and grabbed my heart. "Ev, you scared the crap out of me! What are you doing in here?" That's when Charlie started to growl. I looked down and noticed he was baring his teeth at my wife. "Hey boy, what's gotten into you?" I said and gave a couple small tugs on his leash. Then I looked up and noticed that the yellow drawstring hanging down from the pull-down attic stairs was swaying ever so slightly behind Evie's head, as if touched by the evening breeze. "Ev?" I asked again, realizing she hadn't responded. Another few seconds passed and I was beginning to get really freaked out when she finally said something. "Sorry, honey. I heard a noise down here after you left and came to check it out. It was a raccoon. It had found its way in here and I just managed to shoo it out with that broom." She pointed to the space next to me. I turned and saw the kitchen broom had indeed been brought into the garage and was now leaning up against the tool cabinet. "Oh, well, that makes sense," I said, and startled a bit when I looked back and saw her taking a couple steps toward me. Charlie's growls had now become full-fledged barks, and I had to pull him back to my feet. Evie kneeled down and reached out to Charlie. "What's wrong, boy?" she asked, but the only response she got was more barks. Eventually, she stood up and said, "I think he smells the raccoon. That's probably what has him all riled up." I considered this for a moment. It seemed like a stretch to conclude that the reason he was barking at my wife was because of the scent of some raccoon floating around the garage. But at that point, my mind was willing to grasp onto any explanation, just to sever the tension that was much more potent than any other scent in the air. "Oh, that must be it," I said and forced a chuckle. I scanned over my wife one last time. She looked exactly as I'd seen her only 10 minutes ago. Her dirty blonde hair was tied back in a ponytail. Her skin, mouth, arms, everything was the same shape and color that I remembered. She was wearing the same clothes, but her eyes, she no longer looked tired. In fact, she looked more awake than I felt. I thought about it for a second and concluded that, well, of course she looks awake. She just fought off a raccoon. Anyone would be awake after something like that. But even with that rationalization, I couldn't shake the eerie feeling that something was off. "Should we go inside?" asked my wife. I realized I was still white-knuckle gripping Charlie's collar, even though his hostility had abated somewhat. I released a stable breath, drew a new one, and then said, "Yeah, let's go in." We both readied for bed in the usual manner. I kept a hidden eye on my wife, but she didn't do anything out of the ordinary. After 10 minutes or so, her fatigue returned and she yawned again. "You know, those are contagious, right?" I said and covered my mouth as I let out my own yawn. She smiled and responded, saying, "You're contagious." I asked her what that meant, and in response, she walked over to where I was standing at the sink and started making out with me. I'll be honest, I was a little surprised, but not in a bad way. One thing led to another, and let's just say I forgot all about the whole garage incident. Well, at least for a while. The next morning I woke up and opened my eyes to my wife's smiling face looking down at me. There was a large window directly behind our bed, so her face glimmered enough for me to make out the small freckles dotting her nose and upper cheeks. My first reaction was to tense up. My wife had never sat in front of me bedside like that before, and it took a second for me to adjust. But when I did adjust, I noticed a slight warm pressure on my thighs. I leaned my head up enough to see a tray with powdered sugar-dusted waffles, fresh strawberries, and some scrambled eggs. "Good morning," my wife greeted, picking up the tray. "I made us breakfast in bed." I was still a little groggy, but I smirked nonetheless. I wasn't used to seeing this cute, diligent side of my wife so early, but I welcomed the change of pace. After all, it was just breakfast. Oh, thanks, honey. You didn't have to do all this. I know how busy you are. Oh, don't worry about me, she said, and started slicing off a piece of the waffle with a fork. I wanted to do this for you. She poked the powdery delight and started moving it toward my mouth. Oh, there's no need to, but the waffle had already arrived. I opened my mouth and allowed it entry, then chewed what was surprisingly the most delicious waffle I could ever recall tasting. Wow, there's so much flavor. You did all this yourself? Mm-hmm, Evie replied, pleased with my reaction. It's a special new recipe. Oh, I said in an inquiring tone. What's in it? Drugs? It must be, because this is really good. My wife giggled, her smile still radiant in the late morning light. She cut off another piece, and as she reached for me to try another taste, she said in a seductive tone, something like that. That was really the beginning of what I at first thought was an innocuous, if not somewhat positive, change in my wife's overall disposition. I had mentioned that we were 2 years married, and things were just starting to round the bend of that much attested to honeymoon period. I noticed over the past couple months that we were drifting off ever so slowly into our routines, going out on less dates, focusing less on our appearances around one another. It was a change that part of me regretted, but one in which I welcomed, as it meant my wife and I were beginning down the long track of true companionship, not merely dopamine-induced crushing. That's not to say we didn't show love to one another as much as before, but the ways we expressed that love changed. We spent more time coordinating our lives, intertwining our work and hobby schedules, leaning into practical gifts and favors. But now that whole track was flipping. Every time my wife was in the same room as me, I'd noticed her glancing my way, and if I made eye contact with her, she would run over to me, or leap toward me if we were watching something on the couch together, and attack me with hugs, kisses, and compliments about my appearance, or just generally how in love with me she was. This also translated to our sex life, which was never bad, but it went from several times a week to a few times per day that she'd solicit me for action. Now, you may be wondering what the problem is here, and I felt the same way too for about a week. It felt awesome to be getting so much attention, and when it came to cooking or chores, my wife was working overtime to make sure I had to exert minimal effort. It was around Wednesday that I realized I had never asked about her commission. After all, she'd been spending so much time on the house that she must have finished already. When I asked her, she confirmed that she had in fact completed the mural and sent it off to, redacted, dentist's office. I felt it was a bit odd that she didn't show me before submitting it, as she usually did, but she said she was just in a hurry to get it off her plate. I accepted her explanation and shrugged the whole thing off. That was until Friday evening, when I was taking out the trash with Charlie and happened upon Evie's mural stuffed into the dumpster. I couldn't really make it out at first because the dumpster was so full and the mural was really pushed in there deep. For reference, our trash collection day is Saturday morning. But I saw Evie's signature on the edge of the rectangular canvas, painted black against the white background. When I pulled it out, I saw that her painting had been almost completely washed over with an assortment of different paint colors resembling a rainbow tie-dye. The original mural was only visible through several dry splotches that the splatter paint had failed to cover. One of these spots was the main subject's large teeth, that now were no longer staples of cleanliness, but instead were rotting with toxic plague. My first question was why my wife would lie to me about this. But then, even more importantly, why would she do this to her own painting, especially one she'd been commissioned for? I thought all this through while walking back with Charlie. Well, less of walking back and more of stop and go tugging him back. Charlie kept wanting to stop and seemingly curl up to take a nap, which I thought was extremely odd. It was as if someone had shot him full of horse tranquilizer. And then I realized he had been acting this way all week. I just hadn't really noticed because I was too distracted by my unusually ardent wife. I mentally traveled back to when the change in her behavior started. That night I left the garage door open. Then I remembered her standing there in the back of the garage, near all those boxes, and Charlie barking at her. I felt that same chill work down my spine. What happened to my wife? My heart was beating fast as I hung Charlie's leash on the hook and watched him waddle over to his bed and literally pass out. "Everything okay?" Evie's voice sang out from the kitchen. Yeah, I muttered back. I'm not feeling too well, so I'm gonna go to bed early. Oh? Exclaimed my wife. I saw her figure emerge around the kitchen corner. My mouth went dry. Are you feeling sick? She asked, holding a wooden stirring spoon in her left hand. Maybe. Yeah, I think so, I mumbled out. She watched me for a moment, holding me in place with her eyes, and for the first time in our whole relationship, I felt afraid of her. I was worried that she knew what I had found, that she could see it on my face. Well, that's too bad. I was just making some creme brulees for us. I guess I'll heat up some soup instead. Her voice went flat. No, that's okay, I started waving my hand. I mean, there's no need. I'm just gonna go get some rest. My head hurts. There was more silence. Then my wife responded, saying, Okay, honey, you go to bed. I'll meet you up there soon. I just have to clean this up. I nearly winced when she said she'd meet me there soon, but I held it back and said, Okay, love you. Love you too, Evie replied. I couldn't fall asleep. I stayed laying perfectly stiff on my back with my eyes closed, but no matter what I tried, I couldn't stop thinking about the mural. I considered turning over and waking Evie up to ask her about it multiple times, but I stopped myself. I would just ask her in passing the next day, maybe when I was going out the door. No need to confront her with something like that in the middle of the night. Still, the whole situation filled me with dread, as I considered what it might mean. And what might it mean, Michael? I thought to myself. That what? She's not your wife? What does that mean? Just look at her. It's definitely her. Just then, as if in order to confirm it really was her, I turned toward her side of the bed and opened my eyes. I don't know what scared me more, the fact that my wife was awake and watching me, or that she was so close that I could feel the breath from her open mouth on my face. We stayed there, locked in a mutual gaze, for what felt like a minute before she finally breathed out two words. Can't sleep? I felt a rubbery ball roll down my throat and lodge itself there. I couldn't speak, and worse, I couldn't move. I felt like I had sleep paralysis. How long had my wife been watching me? And why was she watching me? Are you feeling better? She asked and reached out to touch my arm. Her touch reactivated something in the motor circuitry of my brain, and I recoiled from her hand. My voice was a little trembly, but I continued anyway. Why did you throw out the mural? I asked. Evie retracted her hand, and for a moment I saw anger seep into the shallow of her facial features. But only for a moment. Then she returned to her playful smile. Oh, you found that, she giggled. Ev, why would you do that? I asked. Well, I wasn't happy with the first one, so I threw it out and redid it. In 2 days? I asked incredulously. Her smile faded. Yes, don't you think I'm capable? Of course I do, I replied. But I mean, you spent all that time on the first one just to throw it out. Well, it was bad, and I needed to redo it. The last week had made me unused to her being this pushy, but I continued anyway. Why was it bad? And did you send the new one in? Of course I sent the new one in. It should be there now, hanging on the wall. I really don't appreciate you treating me like this. I took a deep breath and tried to fit all the new pieces of the puzzle together. If Evie really had thrown the first mural out and made a new one, then submitted the revised one, then technically she never did lie to me, although she was withholding a lot of the truth. Just what was it about the first mural that had made her so upset? I wanted to ask, but I was getting tired now. The fact that Evie was willing to talk this out at all made me optimistic that we could work through it tomorrow. Okay. I'm sorry for raising my voice, I said. I just didn't know any of that, so it kind of caught me off guard when I saw your mural in the dumpster. She sighed. It's okay. I know I should have told you earlier. I was just a little embarrassed, is all. Can we talk about it more tomorrow? Sure, I said. And that was the last of our conversation for the night. But I still didn't get much sleep. Every time I tried to drift off, I pictured my wife next to me, eyes and mouth wide open, watching, waiting, breathing. I got up early and told Evie I was going to get some supplies at the home goods store. She protested, saying how my breakfast would get cold, but I assured her I wouldn't be too long. and with a little time in the microwave, it would be just fine. When I got to the store, I didn't go inside. Instead, I stayed in my car and called Evie's mom. We had been close ever since Evie and I started dating, and I figured her insight may prove to be fruitful. "Hey, Chris," I answered.
"Oh, hey, Michael. How are you? It's pretty early. Is everything okay?"
"Yeah, sorry about the hour. I just... well, there's been some things going on with Evie recently. I wanted to pass them by you, if that's all right."
"Of course. Is she okay? Are you okay?"
"Yeah, I mean, I think so. It's just, I was wondering, if it's not too personal, if there's any psychological disorders that run in the family?" I sighed. "Sorry, let me tell you what's going on. Last week, Evie started acting differently. I mean, not necessarily a bad difference, but she's been super lovey-dovey, like, to extreme proportions. And the other night, I found one of her murals that she spent over 2 weeks on in the trash. She never even told me she threw it out. I guess she didn't like the design, so she redid it in 2 days. And also, she's been cooking a lot, and like, many advanced dishes that I didn't even know she was capable of. It just... it doesn't feel like my Evie. You know what I mean?" There was a brief silence, and I was afraid I might have offended her, but before I could apologize more, she cut in.
"Yeah, I hear you. In terms of psychological disorders, there's none that I know of that run in the family. From what you're saying, it sounds a little like mania, but I'm no expert. Maybe encourage her to see one of those? An expert? I mean, a psychologist. But as for the mural, I couldn't really say. My mind keeps going back to the one event that kind of haunted her growing up. Not in a direct way, but I could see it bothered her."
"Event?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Did Evie ever tell you she had a twin?"
"A twin?" I nearly shouted.
"Oh, well, I was worried that might be the case. Yes, a twin. Identical, actually, which is kind of funny considering what you've told me. But I don't think there's any cause for alarm. Macy, her twin, died during childbirth. Only Evie survived. I told her around the time she turned 8, and I could tell it had an effect on her heart. That's around the same time she started drawing. Her pictures were always very innocent, but as you know, when she got older, they started to take on a darker tone."
"Yeah," I said, remembering all the pictures Evie would show me of shadowy portraits, mired with sad and scary undertones. She drew many things for various groups online, many of which solicited her services via Instagram and Reddit. That's why when she told me about the dentist painting, I was a little surprised.
"Anyway," Chris continued, "I don't know if it was very helpful, but I do think you should take her to see someone. You know, she loves you, Mike. She tells me all the time how lucky she is to have you in her life."
"I know, Chris. And yes, this was extremely helpful. Thank you." When I arrived back home, Evie was vacuuming the living room. It already looked spotless, but apparently some dirt had built up in the carpet during the 2 days she hadn't tended to it. I nuked the breakfast Evie had left for me and ate it standing at the counter, contemplating how I should broach the idea of therapy, when I noticed Charlie's food bowl. It was nearly full.
"Hey, honey,"
I called. I heard the vacuum stall out, then turn off.
"Yeah?"
I rounded the corner to the living room. "I think we should take Charlie to see the vet. He's been acting off lately, and he hasn't even touched his food."
"Oh," Evie replied. "Sure, yeah, I can take him."
"I think I'll take him tomorrow, if that's okay."
"No,"
Evie snapped, and I saw that same angry expression from the prior night. Her nostrils flared, eyebrows bent, and eyes squinted with suspicion. Then it was gone.
"I mean, there's no need for you to bother yourself with that. I can do it."
"But I want to take him. He's my dog too, you know. How about we go together?" I could see the conflicted expression of Evie's face as she bounced between her normal bubbly self and the angry needs-her-way self. Finally, she gave in.
"Okay, fine. We can take him together.
And while we're at it," I said, not missing a beat, "I think we should see a therapist."
"A what?"
Evie said with disgust.
"A therapist. A good one. If you want to go alone, I'm fine with that, but I'm willing to go with you if you'd like." "What on God's green earth would I need a therapist for?"
I pointed at the carpet. "Babe, you cleaned that carpet literally 2 days ago. The whole house is spotless. You cook every meal for me, including dessert. You're clearly having some kind of manic episode." She was fuming now. Her cheeks were filled with blood and looked like she had caked on rouge.
I do not have some kind of mental illness, she stated firmly. I let her own words hang in the air for a full minute, doing nothing but stand and look at Evie. After a while, her shoulders sank and heat left her face. Okay, fine. I see your point. I'll see a therapist. You'll see a therapist next week, I added. Fine, next week. I'll set it up on Monday when the office is open. Okay, I said and felt a weight lift off my shoulder. I'm sorry, honey. I just really care about you and want you to be well. Maybe it's nothing, but if it is something, don't you want it to nip it in the bud? She agreed, albeit reluctantly, and for the rest of the day she hardly said anything to me. I woke up in the middle of the night to the sound of glass shattering in the upstairs studio. I reached over to Evie's side of the bed, but it was empty. I sat up, listening, and heard another crashing sound. This one was a little more blunt, and I could tell that something had been thrown at one of the walls. I got up and entered the hallway. The studio was at the end of the hall. The door was closed, and the only light I could see was a white incandescent seeping out from underneath the studio door. I approached slowly, seeing shadows moving in the light. Then I pressed my ear up against the mahogany frame. There was complete silence. I reached down and placed my hand on the knob. My breath was shallow and the tendons in my neck felt like cords. I gave the doorknob a wiggle and then twisted it open. On the other side, I saw my wife standing in front of a large canvas facing away from me. The walls were splattered with paint of all kinds of color, dripping down and infusing the air with the smell of acrylic. My head became nauseous, almost immediately, then scattered around the walls. I saw broken glass jars and snapped paintbrushes and torn canvases. What? I murmured, almost too quietly to hear my own voice. The picture of my wife's face when she turned around will stay with me for the rest of my life. It was coated with black, blue, and purple paint. Some of it was dried onto her skin. Some of it was wet and bubbling like dark tears or inflamed boils. Her eyes looked especially white against the contrast of her painted face. Her gaze was hard, piercing even. Paint was dripping off her nose, cheeks, and chin. I watched as her tongue poked through her mouth and licked the bubbling paint off her top lip. She swallowed it, then walked straight past me and out of the room. I didn't breathe until I heard her take the final stop down the stairs. Then I nearly collapsed onto the floor. My head was spinning from the toxic paint fumes, but also from fear. My saliva was hot, and I could tell I was on the precipice of throwing up. Before I ran out of the room, I saw the painting that Evie had been working on. It was the most disturbing thing I think I had ever seen. It was a portrait of my wife and of my wife. There were two of them. The first one was an accurate depiction of what my wife normally looked like. Blonde hair, pretty face. The second one looked like some kind of demon. She had dark horns sprouting out from the top of her head, and her face was shadow-like except for a huge red Joker smile. The scary version of my wife was strangling the first one, and in the background, I could make out a stack of boxes. Just then, I heard Charlie let out a series of barks. This caught my attention immediately, and I sprinted out of the studio and down the stairs. I was expecting to see Charlie barking at my wife, but she was nowhere to be found. I turned on the lights as I crossed from the living room to the dining room where Charlie was standing and scooped him up in my arms. Okay, boy, time to go, I said. Then I ran with him through the kitchen and into the garage, tapping on the automatic door opener, which reeled back the large garage door. It was at that moment that I saw the yellow rope leading to the attic above the garage and remembered that it was swaying the night I had left the door open, the night this all started. Looking back, I should have just ran out of there with Charlie. My car was in the driveway. I should have gotten in and drove off. But I just had to know what was in the attic. I set Charlie down and told him to stay. He had stopped barking, so I figured whatever that thing masquerading as my wife was, it wasn't close enough for Charlie to smell it. Then I stepped over a couple small boxes and pulled on the drawstring, retracting the panel in a half flight of wooden steps leading up to the overhead attic. I pulled the string all the way down, so it was stable, then unfolded the stairs so they touched the cement ground. Immediately, I was hit with the pungent odor of decay. It smelled like there was some kind of gas leak up there. I covered my nose with my shirt, then climbed up. The attic was tall enough for me to stand and walk through, so long as I bent every now and then to dodge one of the triangular support beams. When I actually emerged at the top, the scent was even worse. It smelled like a butcher had been fermenting high meat all along the walls. I took out my phone and activated the flashlight, then waved it around. The first thing I saw was my wife's paintings. There were loads of them, scattered all around the edges of the wall. I looked closer at a few of them and saw they were dark. Most of them were portraits of some witch-like figure, but occasionally, there were ghosts or other spooky things. Just who has been commissioning these? And then I arrived at the source of the scent. A blue tarp had been thrown over whatever it was, and I could see flies swarming around it. I already knew what I'd find. Part of me wanted to leave it untouched, so that way I wouldn't ever really know. But I couldn't do that. I wanted to know. So I reached down and pinched the tarp, then threw it off my wife's decaying corpse. She was clothed, thank God, and mostly still recognizable except for the maggots which had started eating her eyes. I turned and threw up on the ground next to me. That's when I saw the Ouija board resting against one of the posts. It was in immaculate condition, and just as I was about to go grab it, I heard Charlie start barking down below me. Crap. I turned back to the entrance of the attic, but it was too late. Charlie's barks became whines and then one final cry before going silent. Buddy? I called down. No response. Someone had turned off the lights, so all I could see below was the dim reflection of the moon coming in from the open garage door and landing on several of the shiny objects. I waited at the top of the aperture, picturing my wife's eyes staring up at me from the garage below. I felt my heart pumping in my neck and ears. Ev? You there? I called, hoping that I could get the thing to give away its position. More silence. I tested the first step, and to my dismay, it creaked. I retracted my foot, listening, but there was no reaction. I skipped the first step and stepped down onto the second one. I kept picturing my wife standing just out of sight in the darkness, watching me. But I continued until I was on the ground. I took another step and felt something obstruct my path. It was Charlie. I bent down and rubbed his fur, and although I couldn't see it, I could feel the holes where he had been stabbed and the blood slicked over my hands. I took another look around, now imagining her somehow suspended in the upper corner of the ceiling. I eyed the open garage door. Was it really going to be this easy? I counted down in my head, and when I hit zero, I sprinted out the door, down the driveway, and into my car. Somehow I made it in and clicked on the ignition. Then, I was driving away. I called the cops as I drove to my brother's house. He lived a couple towns away and told them everything. Mostly, they were concerned with the dead body I had mentioned in the attic above my garage. When they heard that, they said they'd be dispatching officers right away. Of course, they wanted me to stick around and answer questions, but I told them there was no way. Not with that thing in my house. However, after they secured the area, they said they didn't find anyone else in the house. Everything was as I stated, including the body of my deceased wife, but there was no imposter, no other version of Evie. I'm writing this now because charges are being levied against me in the case of my wife's death. My story is obviously unbelievable, and I see now how dumb it was for me to call the cops, but at the time, I just wanted to do the right thing. They think I killed my own wife, my sweet Evelyn, but I didn't. Whatever did kill her is still out there. What's more is that the next day, while I was getting some supplies out of my truck, I noticed there were drops of blue and black paint on the floor mat. My stomach dropped as I realized the imposter had been in my car the entire time, using me as a means of escape. I told my brother, but I don't even know if he believes me. Still, I know what I saw. I know the truth, and I know where that thing likes to live. I asked my brother if he has any attics in his house, and he said he has two, one above the guest bedroom on the second floor, and one above his garage. I haven't checked them yet, but I'm scared what I'll find if I do. But I'm even more scared about what'll happen if I don't. And that's the end of the story. I really hope you enjoyed this one. If you did, let me know. Like the video, subscribe, you know, let me know your thoughts in the comments if you're on YouTube. If you're anywhere else, I'm not sure what your options are, but I hope that I'll see you in my Discord or maybe supporting the channel on Patreon, but that's totally up to you. I do appreciate you if you are currently a supporter. Thank you for being one. I guess if you'd like to send me your story, you can go to storiesaftermidnight.com to do that. And I think links for Discord will be, well, anywhere in the description on the website. But I just hope that you enjoyed yourself here, and I do hope that I will see you in the next story. So take care now. Bye-bye then.